Now, there's a term I've heard, gimbal lock. Now, you're in the moon lander, 47,000 feet, and you had gimbal lock. First of all, before you explain it, please, what was it you said when your gimbal locked?
Well, first of all, what had happened, we had a computer switch in the wrong position. Some gremlin did that. I don't know who the hell did it on board. Some one of us did. You know, pilots don't make errors, right? But they do make mistakes occasionally, and we've done that a million times. We've got a computer switch in the wrong position.
We, by the way, was he and Tom Stafford.
Tom Stafford. He was an Air Force pilot. He did it. I didn't do it. And at the lunar module went tumbling out of control. I'm not exaggerating. I saw the lunar horizon 8 times in 15 seconds. I mean, we were going, and we had an open mic. Sort of like that guy that was flying on Southwest Airlines here, had an open mic. Only we didn't say the same. And it happened so quick, and it was over, and I said to the whole world, golly gee whiz, what the heck happened? It got misinterpreted, or, you know, it was written up differently, but but we recovered, thanks to Tom, by God. He did just a wonderful job. We recovered, made our rendezvous, came home, and paved the way, literally, I think, for Neil to go ahead paying attention on what was one of the main parts of his flight, and that was going no covering that last 47,000 feet, which he did superbly in spite of some problems.
You know, I often wondered, why did you go all the way? You're 47,000 feet, for Pete's sake.
I tell you why we didn't go all the way, because someone thought about it. You know, at one time, they said, if you're going to send them all that far, let them go down. If you're going to put them in harm's way, let them go down. And I guess someone thought about that because the ascent stage with its own rocket and its old fuel tanks, which you need to get off the surface of the moon, were short-fueled. So had we landed, we'd still be there.
So Jim, 11, obviously, we know the story of the first landing on the moon, Apollo 12, very successful. Now 4 men had walked on the moon, and you were supposed to be the fifth, but of course it wasn't to be. So what happened?
Well, actually, I was assigned to Apollo 14. And then as I started training on Apollo 14, Deke Slayton came to me and said, you know, Al Shepard has Apollo 13, but he's been grounded for about 9 years, and, you know, NASA management kind of wants to give him more time to train. Would you mind taking 13? And I said, no, well, there's nothing different between 13 and 14 except the number. I'd be more than happy to take 13. So that's how it got started, and not realizing that Apollo 13 had all those 13s.
You didn't know they were going to launch on the 13th, though.
or explode up on the 13th. So, but anyway, 13 was going to be the third lunar landing mission. Everything was fine. I had Fred Hayes and Jack Swiker with me, and about 2 days out, just after we had done a TV program. Sending the signal back to the Earth. And you have to remember, this is the third lunar landing flight. By this time, everything got complacent. The only knowledge of the flight in the newspapers and the New York Times was on page 97 of the weather page. But just after that, of course, the explosion occurred, and we had to figure out how to get back home again. It's kind of interesting to note that the accident was set up 6 years before we took off. It was set up when we put the wrong thermostat in the heater system of the liquid oxygen tanks. All the previous flights had flown with that, but we had the heater system on in a test on the launch pad for a long period of time, which damaged the heater system and caused a spark about 200,000 miles out. Which was kind of very fortunate, because if the explosion occurred just after we committed ourselves going to the moon, we'd never have enough electrical power to go around the moon and get back home again, and we'd be lost. If the explosion occurred after we got into lunar orbit, or we were on the lunar surface with the lunar module, we'd never have enough fuel in the lunar module to get back home, and we'd be stranded around the moon. So if you're thinking about going to the moon and you might have an accident, have it 200,000 miles out.
So actually, what happened? What did you have to fix, and what was the teamwork that went into fixing it?
Well, that's the nice thing about the Apollo 13. A failure in every essence from the original mission, but a real triumph in the, you know, the teamwork and the leadership of people at Mission Control, who had to figure out what to do, and then we had to correctly execute some of those decisions. One of the things we had to do was get back on the free return course. The course we are on now would take us around the moon and back to the Earth, but we'd be about 40,000 miles out, too far out to be captured for the atmosphere. So we had to learn how to make that course using the lunar module engine to do the work. And of course, then the second thing we had to do was to figure out whether we had enough electrical power to get back home or oxygen. And it turned out that we'd have to speed up our return home. And so we had to do that again with the lunar module engine. And then, of course, on the third time on the way home, we were still beneath the corridor that we needed to get in for a safe landing. And by that time, we had everything turned off. I mean, we had no way of navigating ourselves. But we did have some emergency procedures that we developed for Apollo 8. And they were in the flight manual for Apollo 8. But after that, we tore them out of the manuals for the remaining flights because we thought they were so way out, they weren't necessary. And when the ground crew called up and said, you're going to have to use them, fortunately, I was on Apollo 8, and I remember those procedures.
When you went around the moon, right, to start back, how much help did you have from your compadres in dealing with the details of making that burn and doing all that?
Interesting story. We're getting very close to the moon. They're setting up the information of the procedures that we needed to do the speed up maneuver. But they also said, now look, when you go behind the moon, you're gonna lose contact with us because the moon will be between the Earth and you, so you won't be able to communicate with us or us with you. And so I said, well, I got my two companions here. If I miss something in these procedures that I'm writing down, I'm sure they're listening right now, and they will take care of everything. So I looked over at them, and they weren't paying any attention. They had cameras in their hands. They were looking up at the moon. I said, gentlemen, what are your plans here? And they said, Jim, when we go around to the far side of the moon, we're going to take some pictures. Because as you know, we never see the far side from the Earth. And I said, well, if we don't get home, you won't get them developed.
The two boxes, and you jerry-built, while he and Engel, for how many days, were in the simulator?
And there were a lot of people. We didn't know exactly. We could only guess what they were going through. And they had no idea what we were doing on the ground. And I was being a backup of 14 the next flight. I was in the simulator with Joe Engel, trying to figure out how you fire that lunar module engine with this big blob on the front without going topsy-turvy. No internet at that point in time. So we'd go ahead and work the digital autopilot and talk to the folks at MIT. They'd put a big roll of tape, on a reprogram the autopilot, the digital autopilot, send it on a National Airlines airplane to Houston. They pick it up at the airport. They put it on a simulator. It was better, but not good enough. We went through that iteration for almost 2 days. And finally, Mission Control said, hey, guys, time out. We need something in the next 30 minutes. And all we had was what they eventually used, putting a gun sight on a riser, one guy controlling yaw, one guy controlling pitch, and it worked. Only because they were able to make it work, but it's all we had at that point in time.
How cold did it get? Because in the movie, cold. How accurate was that, and how cold did it get? And you didn't have snowsuits or anything.
Well, actually, in the lunar module with three guys, which you'd think would heat up this little area, actually got down to about 34 degrees Fahrenheit. It got colder in the command module, which was completely dead. And some people said, why don't you put on your pressure suits, you know, your suits that you're going to wear on the lunar surface? And we thought, well, we could do that. Well, first of all, it'd be too crowded for three guys in the lunar module. Second of all, we'd be sweating in the suits and very cold outside. So we just took our flight suits, essentially, that we were wearing all the time and just kept them on.